Today on Pilgrim Radio's His People, Tony Collier on building deep community when you want to hide from your pain.
But when you have a friend in the room that says you're not alone and I've been through what you've been through, that's the meaningful connection that I think it just accelerates the healing. They understand the language. They understand what you've been through and how you've been through it. Sometimes they've been there before you. And even if they haven't, if you're going through it at the same time, they may have tips and tricks that you didn't even think about to heal the same thing that you're battling with.
Tony Collier, next. Today on His People, author and speaker Tony Collier joins Sunny Kane. She's the founder of Broken Crayon Still Color, helping women and children move from brokenness to healing and hope. In her new book, Don't Try This Alone, How to Build Deep Community When You Want to Hide from Your Pain, Tony reminds us that hiding is the kryptonite to healing. If you've ever pulled back in pain, wondering who to trust or if anyone could ever understand, today's conversation offers hope and will help you build safe community and become the kind of person who never lets others heal alone.
Well, hey, Tony, I want to welcome you to the His People program. We're looking forward today to having a conversation on healing in community.
Well, I'm so grateful to be here. I think it's going to be good. I hope everyone leans in.
I think they will. Yeah. Well, you have written before about brokenness and healing, but you've said that this book is your most personal yet. What made you decide to write Don't Try This Alone now? And how has your own healing journey influenced this book?
Yeah, so maybe about 2 years ago in September of 2023, I unfortunately received a call from my now ex-husband that he was being extorted by someone that he'd hired for sexual favors. Unfortunately, this was not the first time in our marriage. We're both pastors. We were leading a church together. And obviously, our marriage was no longer God-honoring on so many levels. But even more than that, as leaders in the faith space, we just had a responsibility to live a life that was morally righteous, right? And so I went on this healing journey that just truly shocked me. I've been through so much trauma. As you said, I have written about brokenness before. I can name all the points of addiction and depression and anxiety and all these different things in my story. And so here I am thinking that I'm walking in the Cinderella story of part of my life. Like I'm married and I've married a pastor and life is good. And then life just hits me in the face again. And my question to myself was, what will I do with this pain now? I know what I've done with pain before. I've healed, I've gone to counseling, I've written about it. I started an organization called Broken Crayon Still Color. Like I know what to do with pain, but what do I do with pain when I think, man, I'm supposed to be in my redemption season. I'm supposed to be recovering from all the pain of my past and my childhood. Well, you run the same play. You get back up again, you trust God, but this time the play included other players. And for me, I'm usually the strong friend, right? Like the one that comes through for everyone else. And the truth is, over these past 2 years, I've needed people to come through for me. And from that place of being needy for the first time probably my whole life since I couldn't hold my neck up, I wrote this book, Don't Try This Alone, How to Build Deep Community When You Want to Hide from Your Pain, because that's what I wanted to do. I really, really wanted to hide. And thankfully, by the grace of the Lord and all of His people that came alongside me, I walked away out of the season with a new truth. And the new truth is we should not be doing this life alone. It is not the way that God intended. And that's why I wrote the book. And that's what I'm like screaming from the rooftops now.
It seems like we're in a time in culture where isolation is insane. We're all connecting on social media, you know, and it's like pseudo community. It's not real community. So it feels like it is for such a time as this. So, you know, you say in your book that hiding is the kryptonite to healing. And I think so many of us can relate to that. When we're walking through something hard, it's so easy to pull back, believing that no one will understand. Why do you think pain so often drives us into hiding and isolation instead of connection?
Yeah, this is a complex one. I hope everyone's got their notes going on here. But at the end of the day, pain so easily attracts shame. That's what's happening, right? Like we live in this complex world that says we got to be perfect. We've got to have the awesome aesthetic, the followers, the likes, the this, the beauty. People follow beauty. Everything's got to be beautiful. And when pain comes into the story, it almost feels like you're doing the opposite of what's required of you to be accepted, to be known, to be liked, to be followed in some ways. And so then shame says, hey, you're not doing it. You're not doing the thing that everyone's thinking. You're not living the perfect life. You don't have the most peaceful marriage. Your finances aren't in order. And so then shame comes into our story. And it says, not only has something bad happened to you, or you did something bad that then caused a trickle effect of pain, what shame is saying is you are bad. Shame is an identity attacker. And so people hide. In my new book, I finish that phrase. I say, if hiding is the kryptonite to healing, then shame is the villain in the story. And so what we should do is try our best to figure out how to accept guilt and reject shame. We can say, I've done something bad. I yelled a little bit too hard at my daughter. I had a little road rage with a person I don't even know. That was crazy, right? Like, I picked the wrong guy. I, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We can accept that we've done something wrong. That's what humility requires of us, while also saying, I know who and whose I am. And I don't have to be ashamed of the things that have happened to me, about the pain that I've been through. As a matter of fact, I am more deeply seen and known when I'm in pain by God and His people, if I allow myself to be. Then that's actually what we really want.
Yeah. Do you feel like, are there practical ways for us to reject shame?
I think one of the major things, this is so funny that we're talking about this, but it is community. And not like I go play pickleball with these guys. I play golf on Saturday. Cool. We sit in church in rows and listen to the same message and then we go home. No, I'm talking about deep intentional community. The reason why I'm specifying that is because when you are in pain, when you make a mistake, you need people that are actually able to hold that. And in order for you to tell if people can hold that pain is that you've built up enough safety and trust over time. So it's about us building up a team of people who can really sit in the pain with us. And then it's going to be those people that say, hey, me too. I'm not leaving the room. Hey, I want you to know, I don't think about you any differently based on that. I'm still here. I'm not leaving the room. Those types of actions, those types of words, truly, like seriously, psychologically, scientifically, biologically, heal our brains. It reminds us that, okay, wait, I'm human. I can make a mistake. Other humans are making mistakes. I can actually admit when I'm wrong, admit when I'm in pain. It does not make me weak. It makes me available for the power of witness to come into my life. And that's what we really need.
Clearly, you are a woman who has walked this road.
Oh, yes. And did it the wrong way. And so that's why I have any type of authority.
But I also think if you had done it differently this time, right? You said, I did it differently this time. That speaks to a process that you were pouring into and building long before that phone call from your then husband. Mm-hmm. Tell us about what was that process of building that community?
So for those of you that don't know the context of my story, I've been divorced twice. And in my first divorce, I was baby Christian. It was a really abusive situation. I ended up having to just get out with my daughter. I was living with another single mom and I had no community. I mean, literally. And I made some really bad decisions during that season for me and my daughter. One of those decisions included jumping into a second marriage too quickly. And ending up with someone who I really didn't know for real. I didn't know that he was battling with sexual addiction and all these different things. But it's because I rushed the process because of the pain. And what I didn't want to do was get remarried and bring all this baggage into the situation and not actually heal. And so while I was still married, I started a healing journey. I said, oh no, I will not make these same decisions, these same people. I won't choose these same people because I've had a lot of wounds in my past. And for anyone that's listening and watching, if you have wounds in your past, I want you to know that they actually inform your relationships. So if you do not identify, name, and heal some of those childhood wounds, you will absolutely perpetuate them into your adulthood future. And I know that because I've done it. Don't worry. Okay. I've saved you the legwork. I've done it. Okay. And so we get to this point in my story where I just vowed that I would live the rest of my life trying to be the healthiest, most whole version of myself. And in that process, I started asking the Lord for friends. And it's weird. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. I mean, as an adult, it's already weird to go up to a complete stranger and be like, do you want to be my friend? Right?
It's like a dating game. Here we are.
Yeah. It's just awkward. Like, what are you even talking about? You're a grown woman. Get away from me. But I think that the Lord was onto something when he talked about this idea of coming into the kingdom as children. I think about my own daughter who goes on a playground and in 52 seconds, she's like, I got a best friend. Her name is this. I gave her your number. We're doing a play date next week. Like, done. I'm like, what? Okay. First of all, you gave somebody my number. That's kind of crazy. But that childlike spirit is what we need to go back to. We need to start asking people, do you want to hang? We need to start asking our friends that we already have, do you want to go deeper? Are we just going to talk about Chipotle and Love is Blind? Or are we going to like talk about some of the things that we're holding so that we can hold them together? And that's what I was doing. Lord, send me friends, being bold, being brave and courageous and saying, would you like to go to coffee? I'd love to talk about these things. Do you want to come over for taco night? These are the things that I think we have to get good at. We forget that the power of friendship is, gosh, sometimes it lasts longer than just a little dating relationship, okay?
Right. Yeah. And yet I know that so often that there is kind of a resistance sometimes to building that community because we have been hurt before. And so trusting feels really risky. So what would you say to the person who wants healing but is afraid of what you're talking about because they're not sure if they can trust again?
Well, first, as always, I want to validate that pain. Because that's what's influencing you. That's what's telling you not to trust again because you were betrayed once, because they gossiped about you once, because you've had difficult experiences. You were abandoned. You were ghosted. I mean, let's just validate the fact that, yeah, we live in a fallen, broken world. And let's also just lean into the fact that the people that hurt you before don't get to have your future now. How dare us allow people that have hurt us, betrayed us, gossiped on us, have our past and our future. They can't have both. No, we are going to get back up again. We are going to learn to trust again. We're going to heal some of those wounds so that we don't bring those into future relationships. And we're going to decide that living a life connected to other people is the way that we're going to do it no matter what. And that's the vow that I had to make about 4 years ago. Like, no, the people in my past don't get to have my future. I am smarter now. I'm wiser now. I've got more healing now. So I can identify other healthy people, other red flags that I didn't notice before. I can see them so much clearer now. I want to live a full life. I want it to be fun and I want it to be full of love. And I will not let anything from my past keep me from that. So I hope the same for you.
Yeah. And I can imagine at first that really it takes practice. Right? Yeah. Because we are going to have that internal resistance. I can think of times in my own story where mine was in the context of church. It was very hard.
Oh, yeah.
And yet in that, you know, you go full circle through that letting community in, which is a risk. Yeah. It was a risk then. And I entered into that. And that process took way longer than I wanted it to. But yet you do get to this other side where you can see, I kind of think the beauty in the brokenness, where you can see, yes, that relationship was very hard. And yes, really hard things happened. Yeah. And yet maybe some good things drew me in. And so you get to the place where you can bless what was. And that only builds more for our future, right? For us to continue to build into relationships.
I really love that. That's it.
So I know that you talk a lot about building safe community. What does that look like in practice? And, you know, what are some traits of safe people that we can look for?
I'm glad that you kind of emphasize safe people, because I think there's this phrase that's been bopping around, like, we've created a safe space for you, safe space. And the truth is, places and spaces are not safe. We cannot trust drywall and all the paint, like whatever. Like, that's not what we're trying to get to. What we really want is safe people. We want people that know how to make sure that they're not just spiritually bypassing, right? Like, the church is so good at that. Oh my gosh, you're in pain. You just got through this relationship. Well, the Bible says, and it's like, yes, great. What do people actually need to hear? You're not alone in that pain. I will sit with you in the grief. I will be here with you. And I'm not leaving the room. I'm for you and not against you. What can I do today that helps you get through to tomorrow? How can I infuse more hope into your life? When you hear people say those things alone are identifiers of safety. And because I can remember a time where my friend was like, oh my gosh, like I just broke up with my boyfriend. And I'm like, whatever, he was ugly anyway. That's not what people want, okay?
No, yeah,
you know, like people want to be validated in their pain, seen in their pain, soothed in their pain. I talk about some of these, the four S's by Dr. Siegel, that we all come into the world wanting to be seen, soothed, safe, and secure. And those types of things are indicators. A friend that goes to counseling, that's an indicator that they're working on being the healthiest version of themselves. A friend that asks questions instead of making assumptions, right? Like curiosity first. And I would say this too, and maybe this may sting a little bit for some people. We desperately want safe, great friends, and we are not safe, great friends.
Yeah, that's a word.
The best thing that you can do to find great, safe friends is to be one yourself, because you'll be able to identify it. You'll be able to say, huh, they're so thoughtful. Oh, they didn't make fun of me on this. Their words are kind, all these things, but it's got to start with you.
And if somebody is listening right now and they go, oh, she's talking to me, I've got to work on that. What do you think is the first thing someone could start doing to say, I'm going to be a safe place for people?
Yeah. I truly do think counseling is just, I've tried to run away from it. I've listened to the podcast and the books on healing. It's not the same. At the end of the day, you need a professional, licensed professional human being to look you in the eye and say, these are all the areas that you've been hurt. These are the reasons why you hurt other people and you respond that way. And these are the ways that you can fix it so that you can become a person that helps people feel seen and soothed and safe and secure. It's got to be that. Then I would say your second place is getting connected with a local church. That's been a big thing with me, and I've had a lot of church hurt. Let me just tell you that. But I just believe in the ecclesia. I believe deeply in the movement of God, and I believe that humanity is God's plan A. And I just believe that when you get in the room with other people who are going in the same direction as you, when it comes to a moral compass, a biblical moral compass, it's so helpful. Now, obviously, what neither one of us is saying is that the church is the most perfect place for the perfect people. No. The church, the idea of the church, the ecclesia, the movement of God, that's the perfect part. The little humans that inhabit it, me and you, the imperfect part that we will have to balance in the church and outside of it as well. But it's a beautiful space to get started.
Now, in your book, you also said that healing isn't a solo endeavor, that it's the work of connection. And so I'm curious, is there a difference between a safe person and a meaningful connection? And if so, would you break that down for us?
So, I mean, we have our source, that's God, and then we have resources to help us heal, and that's licensed professional counselors, group therapy groups. That was a big thing for me, and this is the direction I want to go with this question. When I found out the first level of betrayal and infidelity at the hand of my second husband, I went straight into betrayal trauma counseling. I was like one-on-one doing my thing. In the middle of my counseling session, my counselor at the time goes, hey, there is a group, a betrayal trauma group that's getting ready to start meeting for 16 weeks. And I was like, woo, that's a lot of weeks, first of all. But what is like, I don't think I want to tell my business in front of other people. Like I don't know. I like you. And he's like, I'm telling you, it's another level of healing, all the things. Long story short, I sign up for it. I'm in this room with complete strangers telling all my business as a leader, as a minister of the gospel. I'm so nervous because my ex-husband at the time doesn't want anyone to know, but I want to heal. And so I'm like, oh my gosh, who are these people? I'm telling you something. When you sit across from a human being that has experienced the same type of pain that you have, it accelerates your healing. And so when I talk about meaningful connections, I talk about the fact that when I started praying to the Lord for friends, he sent me Erin Eddy, one of my sweet girlfriends that I love so very much, who's been through divorce before, who had started an organization helping people build up their worth. And literally, it mirrors my organization, Broken Crayon Still Color. Her ex-husband had battled with porn addiction and all these different things with sexual addiction. And that's a meaningful connection. You already don't feel alone when you've got a friend in the room that says you're not alone. But when you have a friend in the room that says you're not alone and I've been through what you've been through, that's the meaningful connection that I think it just accelerates the healing. They understand the language. They understand what you've been through and how you've been through it. Sometimes they've been there before you. And even if they haven't, if you're going through it at the same time, they may have tips and tricks that you didn't even think about to heal the same thing that you're battling with. And so that's what I mean by some meaningful connections, really being intentional about who you connect with.
And I can see just evidence in God's word for this, where he tells us that with the same comfort that we have received, right, we will be able to give to others. We go comfort others with. So
that's really good.
Now, yeah. I know that, you know, vulnerability, transparency, to have that safe community, you're really talking about that we have got to take that risk. But yeah. I also know for a while, vulnerability was kind of this, like, pour yourself out for the whole world to hear.
Yeah.
So I am curious, how do you balance honesty and vulnerability while also maintaining healthy boundaries?
Yeah. So there's two aspects to this. I think the first one is I've always had this like litmus test, this filter of when I wanted to share hard parts of my story. And the question that I ask myself is, are we bitter about this or are we hopeful about this? That's always been kind of like the filter that I've run it through. If I'm still in a bitter place about some things, there's a hesitancy in sharing it to people that may not know me deeply, that don't know my address and where I live and my kids' names and all the things. There's always been that litmus test of, am I bitter or am I hopeful? Because people can tell. They can tell, oh man, she's been through something really hard, but she's hopeful about this thing. There's been healing there. There's been redemption there. The second thing that I would say is that even Jesus had circles. He had friendship circles. And his most intimate circle was him and the Lord, and nobody could get through to that. You and I should have an intimate circle that's just us and the Lord. Outside of that, people would think or assume that he has all of his disciples. That's not the case. He actually had a smaller circle, and it was three that he brought close: Peter, James, and John. We see that in the Garden of Gethsemane, where Jesus was sweating blood, nervous about his call to be crucified. And he brought just three close. Now, they absolutely did fall asleep, but he brought them close for a reason. And then outside of that, he had the other disciples. But then also outside of that, he had the 72, which is a whole nother theological lesson. And then outside of that, he had the masses, the Pharisees, the teachers of the law. Everyone had a place in some sort of circle with Jesus, but everyone didn't have the same access to him. That's what's different. Everyone can't have the same access to your heart, access to your pain. You've got to start praying and figuring out, who are my three, my two, my three, my one? Who are the people I can bring close when I'm in pain and I need to snot cry all over myself? Who are the other disciples that maybe can come over for dinner, but they can't go deep with you? So that's what I would say is kind of a strategy that I've used to build it, and hopefully that helps.
Now, how about if somebody begins, they dive in, they buy the, like, okay, I'm going to get into community here. I'm going to push through the risk here. But as it starts to get messy and uncomfortable, they immediately want to run away. How do we find the courage to stay engaged?
Let me say this first. Fight or flight is a trauma response or a form of trauma response. You got to go heal that thing. Okay. If conflict arises and your palms get sweaty and your pits are sweaty, you got to go heal that thing. There's something there. Your body is just like a moving flashlight or a check engine light. It's just saying, hey, something's wrong here. We need to fix it. Something's wrong here. We need to heal it. So I would encourage that. The second part of what I want to say is actually comes before the moment. So it's living on the offense, not the defense. And I think one of the ways that we do that is to do our best to have healing in place to the point where when these situations come up, we've already vetted it. We've already vetted the people. We've already done our work in understanding how to navigate it. But that's before work. That's you figuring out how you want to handle these hard conversations. And I think that's the hard part about doing friendship well, is that we don't want to prepare for friendship. We want to prepare for marriage. but we don't prepare for friendships. So I think that's more doing work on the offense, not the defense. How am I going to respond? How will I lean into this? What questions will I ask when these hard moments come?
So good, that whole concept of preparing for friendship well. And, you know, I also think that when we do build friendships like this, where there is health and safety and the ability to truly come as you are, where there is community, the world starts to wonder what's up with that. It's sad that friendship is so foreign in our world. And I'm like, It's crazy to me, but it's all the things you're talking about. It's the risk taking involved. It's the courage to move beyond the surface. And it's the very thing that you are pointing to. It was your lifeline. It is the thing that aided you in your healing. And my guess is it was also, did it play a hand in your process of moving towards forgiveness? And tell us about that.
Well, I can be the expert in a lot of things, but forgiveness is not one of them. Let me just say that disclaimer right now. And it's actually weird for me because on the inside, I'm a Teletubby. I love people. I want to bop around. I literally just had Sunday dinner at my house with 5 families, all their kids. I love people and I have so much grace and space. These last 2 years, however, have been so difficult for me to forgive. There was so much embarrassment, so much unraveling. I mean, it hurt. And I've picked up and started and stopped and started and stopped Lisa Turkhurst's book, Forgiving What You Can't Forget, so many times. Here's what has helped me. 2 things. The old cliche, God forgave me first. But truly, like, that has been huge for me. Remembering that I have a savior who just has quite literally forgiven me. And not just once, but all the time. His forgiveness transcended all the years that I've been on this earth. And his forgiveness is covering all the things that I have done and that he knows that I will do. And so that alone has really helped me with that journey. But also, accountability has helped me with that journey too. I've been very open and honest with mentors and other leaders and friends in my life that I'm really struggling with forgiveness. And the amount of grace and validation and witness they have given me, I'd never be able to repay them for reminding me that forgiveness is just not about me at all. It is about showing people what Jesus looks like. Those are the 2 things that I've been holding super close, but my goodness, it has been.
Yeah.
Is the best thing I could say.
And it's a journey, just like healing. Yeah. I loved in your book, because I think so many people believe healing or forgiveness, it's just this place of arrival. And yet you say we never stop healing. What do you mean by that?
Well, that's it. It's like my counselor says it in this way. She goes, if our life story is a bookshelf and it's a row of books from age 1, 2, 3, all the way up to now, what trauma and pain does is it almost pulls out a little book but not all the way. It just kind of like pulls it out a little bit. And so now our story is being processed and told with a riff in it, with a little bump. What healing looks like is not taking the book and burning it. It's pushing the book back in so that there's no riff. The story is still there. The pain is still there, but it's not a riff. I don't keep bumping into it and bringing it into my future relationships. And that, my friends, is, in my opinion at least, a very beautiful picture of what it looks like to be a lifelong healer. To say this will always be a part of my story, and there's going to be moments where those little books are going to want to come out again. And what I'm going to do is be kind to myself and say, I know you struggled with this temptation in the past. I know it's a part of your story. Let's go push that book back in again. That's what we're doing.
Yeah, that is such a powerful picture. And man, I feel like we're just warming up here, but we are nearing to the end of our time here.
We're in third base here, guys. I know.
But, you know, in closing, for someone who's listening right now, who's in a really painful season, maybe they feel unseen or too broken to belong, what would you say to them today?
I think I want to validate that brokenness feels like that. Like, that's not weird or awkward. It's not a thought of insecurity. It's a valid thought that our brokenness feels like separation, isolation. It feels icky and nasty. And the question that we ask ourselves is anyone really going to want to be around that? Does anyone really want to be in the ashes? Do I really want to smell like the smoke from all these things burning down in my life? And I am here to testify that people will say yes. They'll sit next to the fire and watch everything burn with you. They will smell of ashes and they will hold the pain. And then when you're ready and not before, they will walk with you to beauty. I can't make it up because I've just witnessed it. Like, I just have seen it over these last 2 years. I have seen my friends actually walk away smelling of ash more than I do from the fires that burnt in my life because they shielded me from all the pain. That's a gift you don't get unless you decide, I'm going to be brave enough to be broken in the face of all this, and I'm going to ask for people to be in it with me. You don't get that beauty and that glory and that witness unless you practice that bravery in the face of brokenness. So,
well, Tony, I want to thank you so much for being with us today. And for those of you who are listening, you can pick up Tony's book, Don't Try This Alone, How to Build Deep Community When You Want to Hide from Your Pain. It's available wherever books are sold. But thank you for sharing your heart with us today.
Thank y'all so much. I hope you guys get the book. It's good stuff.
You've been listening to His People on Pilgrim Radio. Many thanks to our guest, Tony Collier, author of Don't Try This Alone, How to Build Deep Community When You Want to Hide from Your Pain. Go to tonyjcollier.com. Coming up on tomorrow's program, it's Jordan Coughlin on the merits of singing from a hymnal.
Marketing is trying to convince us we have to use these songs. You've got to look for the new song. One of the results of that can be for a church, we never really have a core group of songs that we can all sing together. We need a common language. Again, I think that's why a hymnal can be helpful. You've curated, these are the songs that we're going to sing together.
That's tomorrow at the same time, right here on His People. Thanks for listening.